So I am very glad I am talking now to Kate Evans in Somerset in England, where springtime is soon to be arriving. She's a comic writer and illustrator, author of Red Rosa, for example, in German translation Rosa, which is a comic about the life of Rosa Luxemburg and, of course, of many other comics since the 90s. How did it come over you to write a biographic comic about her life, and what was your starting point to get closer to her works and to her personality?
So I was commissioned to write Red Rosa. There's a comic scholar in America called Paul Bull, and he's spending his retirement creating graphic biographies of various left-wing figures. So he had in mind to do a project on Rosa Luxemburg, and he was looking for a female illustrator for the project originally. And I was recommended to him, and I knew nothing about Rosa Luxemburg. I think I'd heard her name. I'd heard her mentioned along with other people who were vaguely groovy. I've been around left-wing circles for all my adult life, but I hadn't actually read that much left-wing theory. And so I was immediately interested in the project, and I immediately said that I didn't want to just draw the illustration, but I wanted to write the words too. In fact, I agreed before I knew anything more of her, except that I had seen that photo of her that you see on the internet, the one where she's got kind of short hair, and she just looked like such an interesting figure. She didn't look like the typical kind of 19th century image of what a woman should look like. So I was immediately very intrigued. The way that I set about trying to get to grips with her, I mean, I started by reading her letters, and it was such a brilliant personal insight into what she believed and who she was and her way of being in the world that we're incredibly lucky to have that as a source material. And then, of course, also I read her political works, and I was particularly interested in those as well, because I'd been wanting to write a book about capitalism. I'd been wanting to write about how capitalism alienates people. I'd previously written a comic book about climate change. And there's no point trying to explain climate change until you explain what the engine of climate change is, which is this continual unsustainable growth quest, which is baked into our way of being in the world. So I wanted to write about capitalism. And so being able to write about Rosa's writing, Dr. Luxemburg's writing on capitalism, was just brilliant for me, because I can write both about her critiques of capitalism and also the history of socialist resistance to capitalism and the way that people can take the future into their own hands and directly change their destiny.
And I mean, that's a big topic, Rosa Luxemburg. Her life has a lot of aspects. And can you say what fascinated you most when you then dived into her life? I mean, you could get this from different angles, like she might be seen as a feminist, but also other aspects of her life. Her letters are very fascinating somehow. Was there anything particular?
Yeah, I mean, I think her way of being in the world, which comes across so clearly in her letters. She has this sort of indomitable optimism and strength to her. And I mean, as a cartoonist, you know, you have Asterix the Gaul, who's meant to be indomitable. He's nothing compared to Rosa Luxemburg. You know, she has this ability that even when she's in prison, being indefinitely detained for her opposition to the war, and she is writing to her lover, who is a doctor on the in the trenches in the First World War. They're both in desperately difficult situations, and yet she can write this poetic and uplifting and really sublime letters where she just has this incredible joy about life. But as well as having this incredible joy about life, she has this uncompromising refusal to compromise with capitalism. And she absolutely believes that we have to have equality, and we have to have justice, and we have to have it on everybody's terms. She's got a very democratic view of how she's going to make the world a better place. You couldn't see her going along with the eventual appalling things that Stalin did. And she was a contemporary critic of the Russian Revolution. She very straightforwardly pointed out what was wrong with the Russian attitude to socialist uprising. So she's got this real ability to foreground the end of human oppression and the need for human equality. I mean, it's interesting that you mention her feminism, because she's not a straightforward feminist. Mm-hmm. At times she's writing within the framework of romantic love in the 19th century. She goes, oh, I'm just a weak and feeble woman. You know, I'm paraphrasing, but, you know, sometimes she isn't a feminist. And she certainly didn't want to be just sidetracked into the question of women's suffrage. She wasn't particularly interested in giving upper and middle class capitalist women the right to vote. She was very interested in empowering working class women, and working class women loved her. There's actually an episode that I didn't put in the book where several thousand women met her from prison and took her back to her apartment and brought her food and jam and all the lovely little things that they could. And this is in the middle of the First World War, when obviously nobody had any food or any jam. And so, you know, there was some beautiful female solidarity. But I don't think we have to make her into a feminist hero. But, I mean, she was a woman in her own right, but she didn't specifically talk about women's liberation very much. Hmm. And there's also there's a couple of other interesting ways to look at the multiple oppressions that she faced, in that she had a disability. So she had a permanent limp, and one of her legs was longer than the other. She had quite a serious hip complaint that would have affected her mobility. And she was Jewish, and she was a refugee. So in all these ways, she had these sort of different multiple oppression. Yet she had this really stunning ability to not care about any of it, and to act as though she wasn't in any way held back by them, which is quite interesting. It means that sometimes she isn't that sympathetic to the oppressions of others, because I think she simply dealt with them by going, well, I'm just going to pretend I'm not disabled. I'm going to pretend that you may be viewing me as a woman, but I know I'm your intellectual equal, if not superior. So I'm simply going to walk into this room full of men and wow them all with my intellectual prowess.
I mean, perhaps she was a feminist in a sense that she had her own mind, and that she was a good role model for a female superhero. I find this very interesting that you have this, that she could be seen as a superhero, because a superhero is such a strong figure in comic drawing.
Yeah, she is. She totally could. You could give her cloak. And at one point she's wearing gloves which come all the way to over the elbow. So I'm thinking, right, she's wearing part of the costume already. she was certainly an inspirational woman. She didn't necessarily specifically fight on the behalf of women. She was, back in those days, you had to kind of make a choice, I think. Feminism wasn't specifically addressing multiple different forms of oppression in the way that it does now. There was no idea of intersectional intersectional feminism. So I think she made her choice that she was primarily interested in a critique of capitalism and the overthrow of capitalism. And so her sort of, she would toss her hat in with the working class over the female class. It was quite interesting, though, but the fact that she was a woman, and that she wasn't eligible to vote, and the fact that she wasn't eligible to stand for public office as a you know, a member of the Reichstag, meant that in a way she was more able to stick to her principles. She never compromised what she believed in terms of what is electable or acceptable to the voters. She was quite straightforwardly purist about the idea that capitalism needs root and branch reformation. And she wasn't interested in power for its own sake. And maybe that is because she couldn't obtain power. In a way, she couldn't be corrupted by the electoral system.
Hmm. Perhaps that was an advantage for her independent, very independent thinking. And she was a close friend to Clara Zetkin, who edited the magazine Gleichheit. And so she had a very specific kind of feminism, perhaps, that was very universal. And but the next question, how do you manage to compress such a life of such a personality that has written so much and has written such deep theory into a comic book? How do you work on something like that to single out the important bits? That's very difficult. I mean,
it's a miracle of compression, I tell you. It's really hard because you only essentially have 12 sentences to a page on a comic book. You can fit 6 to 8 panels with a little conversation between two people in each one. It's really hard. And Luxembourg has written a lot. In a way, it probably helps that I don't speak and read German, because I was only able to access the work that was available in English translation. And that was great, because an editor has already made a decision for me about what to supply me with. I have to give a flavour of what she writes. I hope that I then inspire people to carry on and read more directly from her, because her writing really deserves to be engaged with directly. So I arrived at this sort of strange process where I started with her letters and then all her writing, and I started to take quotes from them and rearrange them thematically. So I created a document which was everything she's written from prison, and another one was everything she'd written about cats, and another was everything she'd written about the mass strike. And I'd find the quotes that really spoke to me from her writings, and then I would sort of deconstruct her life. And I found once I'd done that, then I created a timeline of her life, and then I managed to slot the events in. It's sort of like I took her life to pieces and then I put it back together again. It was a very sort of intuitive process. And I tried to construct the story of her life as much as possible using her words. So all the conversation in the book, sometimes it's paraphrased, sometimes it's edited, but it is always based on her writings, on her actual words. And then at the back of the book, I put notes where you see the quote that I'm quoting from in full. I mean, obviously, I then have to dramatize it to make it interesting for the reader, because if I wanted to write exactly what was on the page to be completely faithful, what you would have is a book of Rosa Luxemburg sitting down and writing a letter and a book of Rosa Luxemburg sitting down and writing a book. So instead, I try and illustrate it, and I tend to use visual metaphors for this. So sometimes Luxembourg is talking about the precarity of the worker, and I use her holding a dandelion clock, and the little dandelion seed is like the worker floating in space, unmoored from, you know, their actual social realities, or that unmoored from having anything in the world to sell or do except sell their labor. And then in another place, I would maybe use Luxembourg's cat Mimi as a visual thing to look at while she explains the concepts. You maybe get the cat pretending to be, or you know, I would use an object in the foreground to create a visual metaphor to give visual interest to her ideas. It's really hard to compress it. I was told I had to write the book in 100 pages. I did 180. I think about 60 of those are about the events of her life in the end of the First World War. Basically, the Freikorps really helped by assassinating her at the age of 48. I'd never have managed it otherwise.
For me, it fits very well, because Rosa Luxemburg also had a way to watch the surrounding world very closely, almost like a painter or someone who watches. For example, I was very impressed with something she mentions in a letter. She watches in her time in prison in Ronke, I think, some beaten Romanian buffaloes. I found that very touching. These buffaloes, they have to carry a very heavy burden on a wagon over the prison entrance. And I was also very impressed. And then I traced it back to the letter where she wrote of it. Was her ability to watch and describe very closely making it easier for you to find fitting visual translations of her experiences?
Yeah, the fact that she is such, she has this beautiful way that she is immersed in the natural world. She is a painter. She's actually a very good painter. And she writes these very poetic descriptions. So from the first time reading through the letters, I was just running some highlighter down the sides of the page and just drawing love hearts going, this is lovely, just so beautiful. And I knew that being able to attach images to these was, it was like a gift. It was going to be straightforward for me in some cases. In other cases, it actually posed a bit of a challenge, because at one point she's writing about looking out of the window at the yard that in the house where she grew up with, and it's a beautifully poetic piece of writing, but she describes the sunlight glistening on the cobbles, and then she describes the windows of the houses, and then she describes looking up at the rooftops and then looking over the rooftops at the clouds and imagining her life going forward out over into these clouds, you know, her ambition extending out to the horizon. It's a beautiful piece of writing, but how do you draw something where it starts at the ground and then goes up the windows to the sky and then beyond? It's like she's written something that's almost a comic script, but when you read a comic, you start reading in the sky, and then you move down to the cobblestones, you know. So it was interesting. There were some interesting challenges trying to bring her things to life. It was a gift, really. I was so privileged to be able to do it. And I got to draw buffaloes as well, which is good, because it's always good to draw something new. I've never drawn Romanian buffaloes before, probably never will again. But I certainly enjoyed doing it with Luxembourg's incredibly poetic and evocative description of them to accompany it.
Sometimes the panels are too small. I wonder, were you inspired also by the way she painted, or she drew, or by the way that in her time the people would draw? Like, I remember I was fascinated by the magazine Die Aktion, which was an expressionist magazine of that time. Have you been looking into the styles that people were drawing in that era? Or did you develop it out of your own comic style?
I mean, it was sort of hard for me to come up with the aesthetic, because I travelled to Berlin to try and find the Berlin that she lived in, and it's been obliterated. You know, there are tours of the Berlin Walking District where they go and show you all the major places where things happened during the events of Luxembourg's life. And they are, without exception, they've been demolished and new buildings have been put in their place. If I'd had more space, then, you know, that's definitely something I would have gone with more, you know, trying to find an aesthetic that matches the aesthetic of the time. But to be honest, I didn't have enough time and space to do that. I was really very much under the impression that I had, as I said, I had to get it into 100 pages, and I managed 180. So there wasn't much space to put in more beautiful pictures from her drawings. I would love the book to have been twice the length.
Where did it come from, her ability to be so emphatic for the suffering of creatures, or to engage at such an early age, like she was 16 or so when she engaged for workers' rights? She didn't come especially from a working class household. How did she come to it?
No, but she did come from an outsider household, because she was Jewish and she was subject to discrimination in education, and also she was Polish, and they were an occupied, colonially occupied by the Russians. So they were part of a colonial empire. So I think she had this, on the one hand, this intellectualism, which was part of Jewish Haskalah and Jewish tradition and the Enlightenment, that, you know, so she was surrounded by learning. But on the other hand, she could never be part of a mainstream society. She was always going to be a woman. She was always going to be an unmarried woman, an unmarriable woman. She was always going to be a Jewish woman. So there was no kind of, I think it was very clear for her not to be seduced by power, because she couldn't be part of it. But she has this fundamental love of life, and whether that's natural life or human life, or and whether it's white people or black people, wherever she can see oppression, she speaks truth to power and she identifies with the oppressed. And that's an aspect of her work that I hadn't really realised from the outset. I knew that she was a critic of capitalism. I knew she was a Marxist, but I didn't get how well-developed her critique of colonialism is. And when I was reading her Introduction to Political Economy, which is a book which, unfortunately, quite a lot of it was destroyed. There was a complete draft of it, but after she died, the soldiers destroyed a lot of the manuscript. But when you start reading it, she's writing a history of contemporary society. And she's writing about, for example, the invasion of North America by Spanish conquistador forces, in completely identifying with the indigenous people and their oppression. And I have never seen a 19th century history book which talks about the genocide happening in North America, you know, from a historical and contemporary angle. And she does the same when she talks about the German occupation of Africa and you know, indeed all the occupation by European forces in Africa. She absolutely rejects the colonial project, and she makes the connection between colonialism and capitalism and industrialization and the military industrial complex. Very straightforward links between all of them, which I don't know of any other writer doing at the time. And that's made her work relevant for all kinds of people around the world suffering from in the process of decolonialization or resisting colonial power. So you get her work being quoted by the Sri Lankan, well, it was Ceylon at the time. The Sri Lankan independence movement were reprinting Luxembourg's Reformal Revolution. And so she's got this real international kind of appeal where people from around the world find her things in Luxembourg's writing and in Luxembourgism.
Perhaps she was seeing capitalism from its predicted ending, like Marx would see that capitalism would come to an end at some point in time. And she was very interested in that end, and that she would see in globalization, but at a very early stage. She wrote a book, Die Akkumulation des Kapitals, in 1912. That was before the war, First World War started, very early. But she saw that the globalization, and that makes her also a bit interesting for us as contemporary persons.
Yeah, I mean, Luxembourg's view of revolution is probably romanticized to some extent. I think there is an extent to which 19th century socialists had this idea that once the workers all come together and band together, and once the workers have direct control over their fate, that all oppression will just end. You know, she can write and say, oh, and at that point we will have complete social and equality of the sexes. And I don't think you can just rise up, seize the means of production, and then everything is okay forever or more. So I think there's a slightly utopian view of how to make the revolution and what the revolution is going to mean. And certainly when events played out in Russia, they went so badly wrong so early on that you can see that it isn't that easy. It isn't the case that once the workers are in control, then everything's okay. I mean, I certainly think Luxembourg had a better idea about how to retain fundamental democratic freedoms than Lenin turned out to do, but she didn't get a chance to put her ideas into practice. I mean, I think personally what I take from her work is that she's got a very clear vision of how capitalism is wrong. How you're going to reconstruct society in order to put it right is a big, big question. And she's got some answers to it, but I don't think they are the answer.
Okay, maybe back to your own comic writing and how it developed. I read also some comics from the 90s, about squatting in London, for example, and I was very impressed because I was in the 90s, in 1997, I was staying for some months in London, and I was very impressed also with small press publications of that time. I had some comics from a publishing house, I think it was Slab or Concrete or something like that.
And, I remember Slab or Concrete, yeah.
Was very, yeah, I liked it very much because I like fanzines and small press publications. Have you been influenced by that time and by starting to draw comics in such a style in fanzines or something?
Well, I started in as a student, of an English student. I wasn't an art student in the early 90s living in Brighton, and there were small press and zine publishers around all the time, people drawing things and then just photocopying them and stapling them together by hand. I didn't specifically immerse myself in the zine world because I was interested in politics. So I went to live in a tree to prevent the construction of roads and open cast mines. And then I was part of a very free and interesting sort of underclass of protesters who were living in London and around the country trying to, it was quite an unstructured and not particularly theoretical, but very practical political movement. Part of the opposition to globalization and the anti-globalization protests and the Reclaim the Streets movement. I was part of all of those to some extent. And so I could draw cartoons about those. So then my cartoons were then published in the small press. The political left-wing newspapers were very interested in taking my cartoons. And also so was the Guardian newspaper, which is quite a big newspaper. They took from time to time, they'd take my cartoons. But always what inspired me was the politics. So I'd be part of the activism and then I'd create the images and the cartoons about the activism to try and make it interesting to people. And then I moved on to doing things like writing about climate change, which is a very difficult subject to make funny, but I managed it. So I was trying to explain complicated ideas and complicated political ideas. I was trying to simplify them and make them into comics, because when somebody reads a comic, they're just much more likely to read a comic than they are to read a parliamentary bill or a science book. So I've always been interested in this way of making things accessible to people. As well as writing books about people and writing books about subjects, I also go to places and write comic reports about those. And that's what I did recently in my book Threads, which is about the Calais jungle and the refugee situation in northern France. And that was just, I went there for 10 days and then I came back and I had so many things happened, I had a whole book. I think rather than being interested in comics, I think I was probably more inspired by political cartoonists. I was inspired by feminist cartoonists, and I was inspired by political cartoonists like Steve Bell for The Guardian, who've just got this really irreverent, silly attitude to serious political things. So, yeah, it's always the message, not necessarily the medium, but hopefully I do the medium well as well.
So you didn't have this childhood with Asterix comics and that inspired you?
Well, I did have Asterix as a child. I did really like Asterix. I didn't really like the racism and the sexism, but I did like the way they draw the sea, which is really difficult to draw, and they've nailed it in the Asterix comics. I had some of these things. I tell you what I was really influenced by is there was a series of theory books called Readers and Writers series, and they were things like Introduction to Hegel, Introduction to Marx, Introduction to Freud. And they were these books where they had some of the theory and then they just pepper it with illustrations all the way through. And their very free attitude to taking text and then squeezing illustrations into it, I think I've definitely been inspired by that. Because I'm a cartoonist, people come up to me and go, oh, but you must like Spider-Man, you must like Batman. And I'm like, I don't really get a lot of superhero comics. I don't really get a lot of comics-y comics. I've definitely come more from the tradition of political cartoons.
Maybe back to present time. And what do you think, how can Rosa Luxemburg be transported into the present time? What parts of her life can be useful for nowadays activism?
Well, the one that's most prescient, unfortunately, is socialism or barbarism. If you want to take one phrase, and it's not one that she invented, she's actually quoting Karl Kautsky, but she put it in the Unionist pamphlet. So socialism or barbarism, it's such an important concept, because right now, just like in 1920s and 1930s, we've got a situation where the financial system crashed in 2008. And ever since then, the rich have been coming richer. But for the average person, the material conditions are getting worse and worse. And we have got a whole generation now who expect their life to be worse than their parents and who expect their children's lives to be worse than theirs. That is what's happening all the way across the world. And the result of that is that people are driven to extremes, and we are seeing the rise of the far right specifically because people want change. So unless the left can pull together and build an alternative which is real, which is vibrant, and which is possible, then fascism is going to be the inevitable result. You know, we have got, as well as that, we have got a capitalism which is it's reaching the limits of growth in the planet. We're reaching the point where the planet is becoming unstable, where the weather systems are becoming unstable, where our food production systems are becoming unstable. So if we don't have socialism, we are going to have barbarism. The other things, I mean, her critiques of globalization and military industrialism and her rejection of colonialism, that's all an ongoing project. That's all very, you know, that's all very inspirational and relevant. That's not going to be relevant. But also, I really like her ideas that she's looking at in the mass strike, are that things can change very quickly and that spontaneous uprisings by people can change the script. They can flip the script. And I think if we keep in mind that basic democratic urge of Luxembourg, where it's a project about everyone, where it's a project about everyone's human rights, where it's changing things for everyone for the better, not just for a few other people to get into charge and pretend they're being left-wing, but for everyone to get real material changes in our lifestyle. I think that is the vision. I think it's the only vision that's going to result in us saving the world.
For me, your comic book Red Rosa was very inspiring to take a deeper look into that history behind the comic. For example, the uprisings of 1905, I didn't know anything about, and that was very influential for Rosa Luxemburg, I think. Thanks a lot. And I'm interested, what are you drawing at the moment? Have you new projects in work?
Oh, well, I've been ill for 3 years, so that's a bit boring. I've got ME, so ME-CFS, which is it happens to so many people, particularly women. Wonder why we don't have a cure for it? Let's ask the sexist medical profession. So I've been rebuilding my energy. I was been really quite ill for the best part of 2 years ago. I was very ill. Wouldn't have been able to do this interview. So I've been rebuilding my energy very slowly, trying not to catch coronavirus. I do have a new project, but I can't tell you what it is. I would have to kill you. And I don't know how long it's going to take me, because transforming just to be well enough to be able to plan the next book is enough, and then to be able to draw it is going to be another hurdle. So look out for me in 3 or 4 years, but okay. Hopefully it'll be just as good as Red Rosa. I think she's a tough nut. She's a hard person to beat. If I could match it, I would be happy.
Compressing reality into a comic book can't be a simple task sometimes, I think.
That's the nice bit. That's the fun bit. Just picking out the quotes that tell the story is the fun bit. Getting the permission from the person you want to write the comic book about to be able to do it is the thing I may be stuck on at the moment.
Thanks a lot, Kate Evans, writer and author of Red Rosa.